extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, David Goss. Two-man show today as we prepare for MLS Match Day 6. The theme of this weekend, international absences. The teams most affected, the players most likely to step up, and the match of the match day, which is just, we need to workshop that one a little bit. We'll also take you through the news headlines. Olivier Giroud to LAFC. Daniel Rios is back in MLS. We'll tell you which team. Jonathan Rodriguez to Portland is done, and he doesn't like being called Cabecita. Richie Larea is out long-term in Toronto, which is a bummer for John Herdman. We'll give early progress reports for Herdman and all the other new managers, give our surprise breakout players so far in the East and the West, and of course, give you what you're really hoping for, which is the Golden Boot draft update. But first, trivia question for you, Dave. We'll be talking about this for years to come. Which is the better U.S. Open Cup first round performance? One, Sasha Kljestan starts and captains the Des Moines Menace in the Open Cup. He plays 120 minutes, gets an assist off a half volley, and scores the game-winning PK. Option two, David Goss drives to Burlington, Vermont, drinks all the IPAs in the city, and the Vermont Green notch a historic Open Cup win with Dave right in the mix. Who's the better performer, Sasha Kljestan or David Goss?
I just think it's one of those things where when you talk about greatness, you talk about sometimes peak of performance, but then you also talk about sometimes class is timeless, right? And Sasha's ability to see the game of soccer and affect the game of soccer and my ability to just damage IPA beers, even though we've both retired from that game, we come back in, and some of the things that we're still capable of, those never go away.
It's like you never left. You know, Sasha can still strike a ball as pure as someone can strike a ball. You can still drive 7 hours and manage to stay up till 5 a.m. like you were in college. It's like you're back in the Northeast.
I was back in New England. I felt my pure strength. I was worried because I wasn't sure what time my class was the next day, and I felt like maybe I had to hit the library, but otherwise, everything was good.
Look at that. Just a good student, even in these days. Thinking about actually going to class. I think I would have been just like, yeah, I guess I don't have class tomorrow. Tell me about Vermont, man. The green. It looked wild. Flares, goals, 4-3 wins. It was everything they could have hoped for.
Yeah, sellout, I think it was over 2,500 in the stands. One of my oldest friends is one of the founders and operators of the Vermont Green FC who play in USL2. This will be their third season coming up, and this was their first ever Open Cup game. So I've been friends with him since kindergarten, maybe. I think we played on the same back line from seventh grade on because he was better at me at soccer early on, and then I slowly caught up. And I've known him since, and we've played soccer in the city. You've played with him, and he's been living up there. Yeah, he's been living up there for 2 years, along with his good friend from college, Matt Wolf, who anyone who follows MLS will know as one of the premier crest creators in all of Major League Soccer. He's worked on a number of them. I think LAFC probably the best, but he's worked on a number of them. And so they put this team together. They've built it. Anyone who doesn't know already, go look at their content. Go look at everything about them. The gear is cool. The stuff they do, they're built around environmental justice and social justice. And they've just been a hit early on. So this is their first ever Open Cup game. First time they've ever played a fully professional soccer team because they're in USL2, which is semi-pro. And I believe it was the first Open Cup game in the history of Vermont to be played in the state. So I called up one of my oldest friends and was like, we got to go. Because when are you ever at a stadium or at a game and say, oh, yeah, my friend is the owner of the team? Like that's not a world I'm going to live in very often, or it's going to happen. And I had to be there for the first one. And they played Lexington SC, a USL League One team, so a fully pro team, coming from Lexington, Kentucky, with Cameron Lancaster at center forward, Nationals' first ever MLS signing. Yeah, one of the greatest goal scorers in USL history, Louisville legend. I believe Jorge Corrales was the starting left back. If you remember, Cuban defector from CF Montreal for 2 years and Chicago Fire for 2 years.
Oh, that's a good deep cut right there. I couldn't even keep up with that.
He started at left back. There was a DC United player who was starting in the starting lineup as well. So it was pretty cool to see them sort of battle through it all. And I was just praying for an entertaining close game, because I have traveled long distances for blowouts in the past, and they were up 2-0 in 11 minutes. They defended for 5 minutes, first corner kick goal, defended for 5 minutes, second corner kick goal. And it was just like pandemonium. And then this moment of pause where everyone looked around and was like, is this really happening? And they hung on 4-3 in the end. So it was like dream scenario, great crowd, great atmosphere, great setup, obviously great result. And then I got to go celebrate.
And then you celebrated, no doubt about that. This is the only USL League One team that lost, Lexington. Green taking them down, 8 wins for League One otherwise. USL Championship and MLS have not yet entered, but MLS Next Pro had a mixed bag. 3 losses to start the first night, then 3 wins in the second night. NISA went 5-1, and then the non-professional teams were 5-16. But it's the first round of the Open Cup, man. It gets a little bit weird. You start to have those throwback names that pop into starting lineups, whether it's Sasha or a guy like Andre Lewis, who I saw score a big goal for Spokane against Ballard and win that game. Andre Lewis is like a third or fourth overall MLS Cup or MLS Superdraft draft pick back in 13 or 14. There's just all these names that start to pop up as the competition starts. And for those of us that have been dug in on this for a long time, it's fun to see those guys have another opportunity or see that they're still playing or just have a reason to Google them and get an update on what's going on in their lives. What's the culture like in Vermont with soccer? Like, give me a little bit of color at the game. How is it uniquely Vermont?
It's cold, so a lot of beanies, a lot of scarves, a lot of that vibe, a lot of that energy. You've got porta potties at the game that reproduce your quote unquote waste into compost to be able to use for farming, which I think is pretty unique to them. You've got 3 different recycling bins everywhere. You've obviously got deep Vermont breweries that come out and represent. And then I think for the crowd, I think that Vermont, every supporter section in MLS has a little Vermont in it already, culturally. And so it's not that different, that part. You've got the chants in the different languages. You've got fans who wake up or stay up at crazy hours to watch this sport all over the world, like all of us do. Whether you're trying to watch Asian Champions League or Premier League or Liga MX at the end of the night. And so I think that part is like the most similar. Once you're in that supporter section, you're like, yep, these are my people. Like, these are my people in Vancouver. These are my people in Houston. These are my people will be in San Diego, like that we're used to. And so that part I think was pretty familiar, but there was a pretty healthy passion, I think, about it, but also like the right amount of angst with the right amount of like, this is a good time and we're going to come here and enjoy it. So it was really cool. And like, these are college kids, and most of them, I think they got together 3 days before the game, traveling from all over just to sort of get there. And it's like, you get to go in front of 2,500 people on a broadcast, play a pro soccer team, have the best night of your life. They chug a little maple syrup post game after they win on the field, which is a pretty cool tradition. And it's just like, what are the odds that that's going to happen for most of these guys, especially right now in their careers?
I want to say a big thank you to David Goss, who picked up a youth small wildflower jersey for the Weeby boys. So we're extremely happy to get that crest on these youngsters' chest. But congratulations to Vermont Green. Congratulations, too, to Red Bulls, too. But they knocked off Tyler Adams. What?
Yeah, I think Tyler's running a Hudson Hammers, I think the name is. It's USL 2. I think it's the top of a youth club that he's associated to in his hometown. And his brother scored the opening goal for Red Bulls 2 to go up ahead of them. And they ended up winning 5-1. And that's like, Tyler Adams is the first ever player in Red Bulls 2 history. And now his brother's scoring against a team he owns and operates. It's just a crazy convoluted world. I think, like you said, we love Open Cup. I've been to games at all levels all around the country for this competition, grew up going to Rough Riders and going to see some of the Greek Americans and teams like that in this competition around the tri-state area. We've been to the final a ton, and it's always like these ridiculous stories like this of, you know, FC Motown being like, yeah, he's got to get off work to get to the game. We're going to see if he can get out early so he can fully warm up. And you're like, this is happening. This is the world.
The Villages, Farolito, you know, Farolito getting another big win, and they have a crazy history in this tournament as well. I mean, this is the beauty, as you said. I mean, the whole point is that it's open, that it's not closed off, that amateurs can mingle with professionals, that retired professionals like Sasha can come back and work their way into a legendary club like the Des Moines Menace. I mean, this is why it's cool. So round one is just another example of that. And we still have MLS and USL Championship to enter.
Do we have anyone else we want to push out of retirement to play? Like, all that Sasha question.
Push out of retirement. Well, let's just check those TST rosters. There's got to be some, like, come on, guys. You're busy in the summer, but you're not busy in the spring. Just double up. You're not going to be cup tied. You can still play TST.
I can say this. The thing about playing with players like that, and we've now both done it a little bit, of like random former pro players coming to co-ed men's league pickup, is they play a different brand of soccer. They're like almost harder to play with sometimes, because they're like so good technically, they're never going to go in for a header, and they have such a high level of expectation where it's like, I'll just go from left back, I'll ping it cross field to you, you take it down, you ping it back to me. And it's like, yeah, for sure. Or maybe like I'll just head that ball on because I can't bring it down cleanly. The guy who brought Sasha, who scored the goal off Sasha's assist, that first touch out into, you know,
it's perfect.
On a 70-yard ball.
It's perfect.
Perfectly into his run. So like, it's not easy.
There's a level here. And obviously neither of us are at that level. I don't think anybody's going to be asking us to play for their Open Cup teams. But look, go ahead.
Need someone to come stand in the crowd and help you drink beers. You guys, I'm open.
You got somebody world-class for that assignment right there. Speaking of assignments, you're on GA Cup. The broadcast schedule was just announced. Give us the lowdown. What should people expect to get excited for?
It's moved to IMG now, so less wind affected than it has been. Last year was the first year there down in Florida. To me, it's a feast of soccer. If you love the game, it's going to be like pretty much four games a day, every single day. U15, U17 competition, almost 20 clubs from outside coming. Flamengo and River Plate are always massive giants. Obviously the Liga MX sides are some good teams. I think they're bringing some really interesting teams this year, like AZ Alkmaar, where you know about the development and style. And what's fun is the style of teams at this age from different countries is so different. When you watch an FC Midtjylland and a Toulouse and a Club America and an MLS team play at this age, because like the tactics are still kind of at the beginning, but they're starting with what's most important to them at the big picture. It's really fun to watch. And if you're following the news over the last week or two from Tom, Kevin Sullivan, who was a star last year, he was at the U15 competition, and now Man City scouts are saying they think he might be the best youth player in the world and could be headed to Europe by the age of 16. So that's the type of talent that's on display that we see every year. Gio Reyna broke out in this competition playing up an age group when he was a lot younger. FC Dallas, all the stars. Kevin Paredes was on a loaded DC United team that we've seen in the past with guys like Teddy Cudi-Pietro and players like that. Sorry, Theodore.
I know.
Cudi-Pietro.
It's going to take me years to break that habit.
Well, when he was at GA Cup, he was still Teddy because he hadn't grown out of it yet. So it's that type of talent. It's facing off against the best players in the world. Enzo Fernandez, Julian Alvarez, they came in the past with River Plate. I believe it was 2 years ago, Man U brought Kobe Mino, who now is in the England team and starting week in and week out for Man U. So best international players, best players in MLS from Canada and the US going up against each other. And it'll be a bunch of broadcasts on MLS Season Pass.
Should be fun. Should be fun. I'm just heartbroken. We're going to go to Florida next week, which is a week too early to go to GA Cup, which I'm sure that Mindy would have been extremely excited about. Cameron, though, would have been in heaven. Maybe someday we'll get him out there. Maybe someday he'll even play in it. I can dream, right?
Uncle Tom's coming down. I think you can send him to Tom.
No, for sure. I'll trust trust my child with Tom Boger. This is MLS. Check it out on YouTube. Way too early MVP discussion. Hung out with Kalen Carr and Matt Doyle last night after they recorded that one. So good one to go check out this week as you're ready for match day six. Another one for you. Tom Penn was on offside with Taylor Twellman. San Diego FC is coming in 2025. And apparently San Diego want to be the Ajax of North America. And they get our headlines started here in a little news segment. They signed their second and third players, Dave, a defensive midfielder. Jeppe Tverskov, he's 30, and a forward, Marcus Ingvartsen, he's 28. Both those guys from Nordjylland in the Danish Superliga, and also Right to Dream Club is that, and that's what San Diego will be. Three-year contract for Ingvartsen, and then a two-year deal for Tverskov. So, yeah, they said to bring the Right to Dream style of play and culture to the club. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, they have a belief that you can lean on young players that you can help train to be championship teams. That's what Nordjylland's built through. So Right to Dream is a setup that was built out of Ghana, I believe, originally. And they go around and they run camps in every town that they can get a camp in, both in Ghana and then out. They've broken out now and they've gone into, I believe, like Mali and Senegal and other countries as well. And then they bring young players in. And they play aggressive, fast soccer, and they believe that in their training, they can get young players to the level to be able to compete at a young age. And so it's interesting to see them make a few veteran moves early. But I think the key there is you have to have the right veterans for young players to come in and around. And you're bringing in two guys here who have been inside this system in Denmark. So they understand the responsibilities that will be on their shoulders when a lot of the other players on the field will be 18, 19, 20 years old. I think it's exciting because it's different. And like in Major League Soccer, I think what's really fun is when teams choose different routes and paths to try and be successful. It should be a gold mine of young talent. Like we're talking about Southern California. We're talking about the US-Mexico border. We're talking about tapping into Tijuana as well, what Cholos did for a number of years. Doing that and then having the name of Right to Dream connected to it as you go out around the world and try and recruit young players. Was Payne still a Right to Dream guy?
I'm not sure. Thinking about MLS, like Josh Yarrow was, David Akam.
A lot of college soccer players.
David Akam is probably the best example in MLS for a lot of reasons, but there have been a ton of Right to Dream guys.
Yeah, I believe they have two pathways internally. One is the educate, everyone goes to school and it's really important, but they have players who they send to the US specifically to play in prep schools and then matriculate up to college. Useni Buda, I believe, is a Right to Dream guy as well. And he was high school player of the year and then became a Stanford guy. And when you go through college soccer now, every one of the top teams has one or two players that have come through this program. So it's been successful. It's now been over 10 years, I think, of running it, which is pretty cool. And I think it's going to be a really cool link into Major League Soccer. It'll be interesting then, like, okay, what's the big name, right? You know, they have to make one splash name. Like, how does a name fit into something like this? And that will be interesting as well.
Speaking of big names, up the road in Los Angeles, LAFC, per Tom Bogert and Mr. Ornstein, in talks with Olivier Giroud. Is this the right number nine for LAFC, Dave? They have two DP spots open, burning a hole in their pockets, or maybe not, because they don't seem in that big a hurry to fill them. No. Would Giroud be the right guy?
I mean, I was rumoring around Griezmann on the last show that I made it up myself.
You were mongering?
Yeah, I like that rumor as well. I love this idea for LAFC. He's clearly still at the peak of his powers. He is a player whose physicality, I think, is not as affected by aging and athleticism. Like, his ability to move at his size, his control, his strength combined with his speed, I think those are things that clearly have aged well. Like, he's 37 already. He's still doing it at a high level.
It's crazy that he's 37 and still doing this.
And he's, like, bounced back a little of, it felt like coming out of Chelsea, it was done for him, and now he's found his feet again at Milan. I think he's a special player when you play into his feet to create for his teammates, and he's always a threatening option in the box. So I think he could both unlock Buonga and Oliveira, but also be your leading goal scorer and take pressure off them. He's a factor on set pieces. He's been in the biggest games in the world when it comes to France, as well as with his club. So he is the type of player that I think makes a lot of sense here. Of, I think he will age well, and it'll keep you successful while also helping the young guys get better. Like, if you're David Martinez, you're going to be a better soccer player playing with Giroud. That then leads to, is that a transfer that goes back out the other way? Eddie Etuesta, like all guys like that. I think he makes their life easier. We've seen what he's like at Milan, right? They've got two legitimate goal-scoring wingers, one in Pulisic, one in Leao, that he unlocks and he creates for, and he makes their life easier, and they play off him. And then he's able to find space and make near post runs, which opens the far post tappings for them as well. I think he could do all of that for LAFC. And my understanding is that I think he's pretty close with Hugo Lloris. So he kind of knows what he's getting into rather than coming in blind and maybe being shocked.
Lloris is like the perfect, it's not even like a sleeper cell thing. It's just very obvious. It's like, hey, Hugo, come enjoy LA. Tell all of your friends, bro. Like, tell them how much fun you're having, how nice it is to live here, how the quality of the league is better than they might have thought. Tell them this is where their life is going to be beautiful from a personal side as well as a professional side. I mean, Giroud, 14, 18, 14. Those are his last three seasons goals, all comps. Double digits in Serie A all of those years. It like LAFC knows you can sign guys in this age profile and have it work. If his body can do it and if he's motivated, which it seems like he is to get to MLS, understandably so, I think. Hey, hit that check mark, man. That's going to raise your ceiling so much higher. We'll see if it happens. It would be nice to have somebody for Buonga to run off of, to cut back for. And just a player of Giroud's stature in MLS is just fun.
Yeah, it's a very clear hole he fills. He's also a guy who's moved countries before, so he's played in different leagues and he's had that learning experience, which is not always the case with designated players who were like were anointed guys at one club their whole life and have never really had to deal with that. It feels like Giroud could come in and maybe hit the ground running quicker than what happened with Bale and Teo and like those signings that year, which was like, it was enough to get them over the line, but they were not the guys day one. And it even took Buonga a little bit of time to figure it out. So it feels like this would be a really soft landing spot and you could have some confidence that he could hit early. And it's such a clear need for them. It also doesn't take off the board another DP spot then, which is like, okay, maybe you want another develop and sell guy. You could do it there and still have a winning roster. Because if you bring Giroud into this team, they go back into the Western Conference finalist conversation, which I don't believe they're in right now.
Jonathan Rodriguez is officially signed with the Timbers. I do not say Cabecita. We will just eliminate Cabecita. The word is that maybe he doesn't like to be called this, which I understand. You know, I understand. Sometimes these nicknames can get branded on you and they never go away. Per Tom Bogert is actually a $4.3 million deal for the Portland Timbers. So that's a good deal for them. Daniel Rios joins Atlanta United on loan from Chivas Guadalajara. He's going to occupy a supplemental roster spot. 9 goals and 30 appearances with Charlotte. That got him back to Chivas, where he didn't really play much over the course of 2 years back with his original club. That's who he came up in the academy with, I believe. But like, there's a ton of teams that should have made this signing. Like, everybody should have been trying to get Daniel Rios, Dave. Like, yeah. FC Cincinnati have been talking about needing that profile.
So
like,
weird to me.
On a supplemental spot? Like, what? Yeah.
He would be a perfect fit. You've seen him be a threat already in this league. He's also a little bit more of like a big hold-up target guy. So then you take away any of that role for Bupenza, because Bupenza has not been healthy. He's not been there yet. That's its own problem. The other side is like, neither Corey Baird or Sergio Santos are an exact fit of who Brandon Vasquez was. So like, I think Bupenza can do more things than Brenner or Vasquez. And therefore, it might be okay because his game is so rounded. But why wouldn't you go get a Rios to be that option for you and have that opportunity? I think the LA Galaxy would be interesting as a backup for Jovalich instead of Miguel Berry all that time. What about the Houston Dynamo?
Yeah, 100%.
And the hold they've had at center forward. So I think it's a great move for Atlanta because we saw Yakumaki struggle at times with injury last year. You could also potentially play them as two up top if a Thiago Almada is gone for a large amount of time and you don't really have a 10 that you trust because you've got two legitimate wingers. You've got fullbacks who get the ball in. You can have two big forwards on the field. So I think it's a great move. And it's, again, we see with Garth Ogaway, he trusts normally what he's seen in MLS over the unknown. And I think now that he's reset the roster, now he can start to do the little around the side moves that we saw be so successful over his time in Seattle, which he wasn't going to do that as to build the core, because that's kind of hard in terms of money in MLS of like getting guaranteed things. You're going to have to trade a bunch of allocation, whatever. But now that he has that spine, he can start to add like this.
Yeah, look, just a couple goals. They don't need him to be the man. Yakumakis has gone on international break. Don't know if Rios will be the guy this weekend. They have Tiare as well. But like, just give us a couple goals. In key moments, be an impact player as a sub when we need you, whether it's in a game we're winning or losing, hold the ball, be the one that helps create chances. Like, it's these little moves that can get you over the hump in critical moments. Speaking of getting over the hump, Richie Larea trying to get over the injury hump. Apparently he had hamstring surgery. He's going to be out for 3 months. So Toronto missing Richie Larea for a long period of time. That's a bummer for John Herdman. Marco Angulo is going on loan to LDU Quito. He's a U22 midfielder for FC Cincinnati. Apparently Quito has purchase options on this one. Possibility that Cincinnati would go out and use that U22 spot that is now open via this loan to get that forward that we're talking about. We'll see if they do that. And then Mike Cornell reminded us that we haven't talked about Schulte to Arsenal, the Crew goalkeeper to the Gunners.
Did we not mention it?
We haven't.
I think we've probably put enough time to how realistic this is.
Got it. All right, let's do the match of the match
day. I could be wrong, by the way. I wouldn't be shocked if teams around the world that understand what's going on are like looking at Wilfried Nancy's players and saying, if we play a similar style, we'll go get their guy. If Arsenal somehow find a way to reach into MLS and make another goalkeeper signing, that would be a little surprising to me.
Yeah, well, let's give Pat a few years here to just develop a little bit more. He's on a good path. But all right, match of the match day is what from match day six? And we're dealing with international absences. You have to account for that. So what's the game that you would not miss on MLS Season Pass?
To be clear, Weeby, you've done this to yourself.
I did.
You set this name and you're like stumbling over it. And
yeah, it's
this
been
is like,
tough.
This is like haikus all over again.
Yeah, I'm not proud of this moment and we'll have to revisit this. I'll have to watch the tape back and just, yeah, you know, see where the errors were made. See, you know, pronunciation, enunciation, ability to just read in the moment. It's got to be examined here. What's your game? Or you want my game?
I'll go first. I'll go SKC Galaxy. In this one, two of the teams, they're not going to lose as many of guys to international. They are both going to open up and play. They're both going to stick to who they are. I think so far, they have been two of the better teams, obviously, in the Western Conference. They've had some epic matchups in the past. So I think this one could be really fun.
Anytime you want Joseph Pencil, and I know we already talked about the right to dream, like at this point in MLS, you've got to do it. And Ricky's still there. Mark Delgado's there. Deion's there. Just saw him in a 3-3 against St. Louis, and Kansas City scored one of the best goals I've seen in MLS, period. Last weekend as well, I got it. That for me is probably the best match for just chaos. I think St. Louis DC is the bet. I know on St. Louis's side, they're really not missing anybody. DC are missing Aaron Herrera and Matty Platola, but you still have Benteke, you still have Klaus and Adeniran. You have these identities that on the St. Louis side is so ingrained and was from the jump with Bradley Carnell. But it seems like Troy Lesane has had that same Carnell-esque effect on DC United in the sense of, hey, from the moment we got here, we were on the same page in terms of how we want to press, where we want to play games, and how we want to put teams under pressure. And similar to St. Louis last year, it's paid big dividends early on. So I think this one has possible chaos match written all over it. But bunch of good games this weekend. Of course, MLS 360 countdown and wrap up on MLS Season Pass. Now, a bunch of guys gone. So we did our best to dig in and figure out who might shine in their absence. Who are you watching here that's going to have their opportunity to really jump out and show what they've got?
I have a weird one because I don't think it really fits the prompt that you gave me, but I ignored you and did what I did anyway. I'm going to go with Luis Muriel in an opportunity where Duncan Maguire with the US U23s, Facundo Torres gone as well, of like, it's your show for the first time. Your team, you're going to get to play at center forward. The ball's going to come through your feet. It's your opportunity, I think, to stamp your first game and say, like, this is the guy you went out and got. I am Colombian international, Atalanta, setting records, you know, big-time goal scorer. And I think I saw a lot of that against Atlanta in moments, but it was either too far from goal or it was in isolated moments where he couldn't get teammates near him. And this, I think, is his chance to sort of show who he can really be. So it's not a no-name guy or a young kid being put in, but it should be his first step to say, Duncan Maguire's gone this summer. Like, this is your job. This is your team.
Jeremy Walker hit us up and said, guys, talk about Orlando City's abysmal, and he capitalized abysmal, start and the reasons for it. Is it tactical? Is it personnel or both? Did the league get better and we stayed primarily the same? What is going on with these Lions? Where would you chalk up this slow start for Poppy and the boys?
It's probably an ingredient mixture of CCC injuries, like the two center mids right now, Lodeiro to start the year. And then I think the chaos of the Duncan McGuire situation of just, he left, you bring in a new player, then he's back, then the new player has to come in. It feels like all of those have thrown wrinkles into the fact that, quite honestly, Poppy's teams never really start well. Like, they are always teams that grow and build as the season goes along. And so I think it's a combination of all of those things. The question of if they got better while other teams did at the same rate is an interesting one. A lot of that's going to fall on Brocalo and how good he is, because their biggest chance of taking a step is both having cleaner chance creation in their setup, but also having a center back that can play close to Robin Jansen's level, because Schlegel's not that guy. Antonio Carlos hasn't been for 3 years or whatever it is since his injury. That to me is the step up that they could take. And it takes guys who come to this league a little bit to figure it out. So I think all of those combined, on top of the fact that, as I've said, they were the top overperforming team last year, and you sang the regression song in Texas for a year, but have not in Florida. But like this, some of this was kind of supposed to be expected.
And we've sort of seen that with the finishing. You know, they've got a ton of expected goals against Minnesota, probably the best example of a game they should have won and last year would have won and just couldn't find the finishes. There, the other thing I would flag is I think you're spot on with Brekalo and also with Gallese's form. 10 goals allowed so far in four games. In 2023, they allowed 39 goals in 34 games. So that rate is just unsustainable. It is not possible for them to be like a top four team in the East at that rate. So definitely some things to fix for Orlando, but they've got Austin this weekend, so that could be a good recipe for them to get back to winning ways. For me, how about Saba? What would you need to say? I know he's not, it's not like breakout, but it's this guy that has this massive ceiling, but normally is playing with Gigi and with Almada, so sometimes has to take third fiddle role. Maybe he's first fiddle here. So we'll see about that. Also, Dax probably going to play in this game. Sleesh is out, so Dax, I think, will start.
Did not go well for Saba in the playoffs last year, if you remember. And that, I think they were overmanned by Columbus anyway. But I kind of had a hope in that series of like, oh, are we going to see – we've seen Saba be good in MLS. I don't know that we've seen him be a designated player level. And, okay, he's a low-end one on a team with two big ones. That's fine. I have not seen games where he's the best player on the field or he's dominant to the point where – didn't he come off the bench in the third game against Columbus last year? I don't even think he started in the end, which
I don't remember that, but I mean, we have a little bit of a different perception. I think Saba has been quietly a super high level and influential with even more potentially to give. I think his goal involvement numbers per 90 are great, are very good. So maybe it's just the fact that Almada and Gigi are around, that anytime those two are there, they're going to suck up some of the oxygen.
Well, most of his goals are being the last piece of it. Most of his goals are getting on the end of what they create, and that's fine. Like, you can't, not everyone can be ball dominant on every single team. I think he fits very well. The hope would be if you've signed a player as a DP that if you have games where someone else isn't there, you will be the best player on the field sometimes and carry them to victories. And I don't know that he's been that guy yet. And so it'll be interesting to see if he can do it in this one.
All right, Saba,
on that
step
type
up,
of
bro.
List, by the way, Andres Gomez as well. Diego Luna is not there. I think Gomez has been awesome so far this year. He tries something all the time, so he's always worth watching, and he's always fun. And this is a game now where you don't have Luna. That's one of your ball-dominant guys. Who's going to create for Chicho Arango? Who's going to be the one that you use as your outlet consistently? He's been that guy in games where they sit deep and counter because of his speed over the top. But can you do it in a little bit more possession and play through him at times?
I would shout out Matty Crux too. I think there's a good relationship in the way those both those guys want to occupy space. Yeah, Crux wants to sit in that little pocket on the right side. And if he's got Gomez running beyond him, creating space for him to receive in or get turned on, our boy Crooksy, you know, he could have a big game this weekend. He's been solid so far. How about Mijatovic for Bakrar? Bakrar's out, and Mijatovic is the big signing out of Serbia for this New York City FC team. Let's see a run out from him against Cincinnati. That could be pretty interesting. And then I'm just going to throw out the entire Chicago Fire attacking group without Jordan Shaqiri. Shaqiri is with Switzerland. So this is another opportunity for that group to show that not only can they do it without Shaq, they might be better. without Shaqiri. We'll see. That's a might. We don't know that for sure. You mentioned, go ahead.
Well, one, it's an opportunity. It was an opportunity for you to list a group. So
I didn't need to. I felt it was clear who I was talking about, and Gutierrez and Erbers and Haile Selassie and Kuipers, right, et cetera.
I'm curious if they do go Bash Brothers and go like double big up top, no Shaqiri, let's just whip balls in and win everything in the
air. Are you saying
long throws?
Like for like, Tom Barlow for Jordan Shaqiri?
Pretty much is what I'm talking about. Yeah.
That's good.
Or Kutsias.
That's good. I enjoy that. All right. How about surprise breakout players? East and West so far, as we just take a little meander through Major League Soccer after five match days. Who is a breakout player for you? We'll just go through and list some people. It's my favorite exercise.
I don't know how much of a surprise this is, but I would say Mitja Ilinic on NYCFC, the right back. He's a young player, so it's less surprising, more like he's there now, he's established, he starts. But he's a game changer going forward. He covers a ton of ground. There are shades of Anton Tinnerholm in the way he covers space and is involved and is like super emotional and electric. He is not as consistent yet, and that's where the steps need to come for him. But it feels like another big find for them at that position. And they have had trouble in chance creation through the middle, but their best phases of play, which have been in the comeback against Toronto and the early halves against Portland, everything went through that right wing, and he was a constant in the final third. So he's one for me when it comes to the Eastern Conference.
Let me get you a right back. I'll see your Ilinic and I'll match you with Juan.
He's a surprise for you?
It's a surprise. Okay, so maybe it's not surprise breakout, but it's a breakout. And the reason he's breaking out in a different way, and I think we understood what he was in Orlando, it's just he's in the perfect situation where he's only being asked to be a vertical threat. He has defensive structure around him that gives him the freedom to basically be riding on the final line for the opponent most of the game, or to have the runway in front of him where we know he can be special. So you're right, maybe not surprise, but breakout for me. He's been one of the best wingbacks in a league that has a lot of wingbacks these days. Let me throw out Sengbin John to you.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. I think a month ago or whatever, before the season started, if you said Reynoso was out and they're sort of trying to put together results, I think all of us would have started by talking about Bongi. We probably would have then gone to Ludd and Fragapane and Pookie. So he has stepped up. I think it fits his style. He's playing a high intensity, high speed, and his set pieces are huge. It was his flick on and his set piece that created the two goals in the last game. I also, by the way, have to say Pookie, in that I thought Pookie would be purely a finisher and without Reynoso or a system that he would struggle. And I think, as I talked about on Monday, like his work rate has been phenomenal. And I think he's actually helped connect a lot of the dots here.
I completely agree. I did not expect to see him like running his A off to start the press, to block in possession in half of the field. And when you block it in, that's where Sengbin also thrives. He's going to be a player, I think, that when the pace of the game is a little bit higher, when it gets physical, when there are 50-50s and duels to win, those are the moments where his physicality, his speed, his quickness, his instincts really show themselves. And then he's shown this year, hey, when he wins the ball, he can break lines with his passing. And when he's being asked to be vertical and direct, that is the best we've seen of him in MLS so far. We have an email here from Mayan, who's always listening, always hanging with us. Thank you, Mayan. The Whitecaps defending this season as compared to last season is a huge change. I say Matias Laborda should be the front runner for the Gauss Theorem Award.
Yes. I mentioned it on Monday. He's up there. He has been phenomenal on both sides of the back three. So he's played at left center back and right center back, which is the versatility they need as they still sort of figure out their pieces. He steps into the attack more, as we saw from the goal, than what you see from Tristan Blackman, which is key because he can connect play. His feet are good. He is definitely Gauss Theorem in that last year, he felt like he was the one big addition they made in the offseason, and he struggled and they struggled out the gates. And now year two, he's found his feet. He looks comfortable. He looks confident in what they've built, and they have started the year better, I think, because they can't really afford to have players playing below their level. Like, they are a classic better than the sum of their parts team. Everyone needs to be hitting in that setup. And so he's been massive to start this year. And if he's this good, that back four or five could be locked in for a while. Like, they brought Adekube back. They're waiting for him. Tristan Blackman, I think, will be there for a while. They've been able to re-sign Veselinovic, who's been one of the best center backs in MLS since the day he arrived, at a really young age for that position. Like, they could be there for a little while behind Kubas, and that could lead to years of them sort of being able to take some risks in attacking signings to see if they can maybe underbuy and get over delivery because they have that platform behind them.
I completely agree. Vancouver off to a really nice start. We'll talk about them a little bit more later. And of course, in the countdown this weekend, an hour before kickoff, 6:30 p.m. Eastern is when that one starts. I'm going to throw Danny Rosero of Kansas City and Moise Bombito out there, sort of on a different level. Bombito out of the draft, but has quickly established himself, not just with the Rapids on that back line, but with Canada. He's actually away this weekend with the national team. And then Rosero is one that I didn't know how it was going to fit. But last year, once it clicked, and that was really a big part of Kansas City going on that big run. And this year has been a perfect complement, I think, to Andreu Fontas. Whereas Fontas is more of a ball player, more reading the game, Rosero has been that more aggressive defender that can cover in behind for him, that can go win the 50-50s that Fontas just doesn't really thrive stepping out for, and has been a really, really smart signing by Peter Vermees in Kansas City. All right, Vermees is the longstanding manager in MLS. He's basically had the job since day one, before the league even started, it feels like. But these managers are off to their first start in MLS. Early progress reports for new managers. We have some A's, we have some B's, and we have a C. Dave, let's start with the A's. We gave two guys early progress report A's. Who are they?
We had two locks. We have then some debating points on other A's, just to be clear for everyone out there who's
Okay. Well, it depends on, your perspective.
I don't want everyone to think we're going to say these two names and be like, that's it. Lauren Courtois and John Herdman are the clear, obvious ones of massive turnarounds, clear impact of playing style, culture. Everything about their team is different today than it was in our perception a month ago and in reality in October and November of last year. So those two, I think everyone would agree, complete successes so far.
What do you like about the Herdman one? What is impressive to you?
That it was not a roster flip. So often when we talk about this sport, it's just signings, players, right? Oh, is the team good enough? No, they need to make signings. And I thought that's what would happen. And there has been very little of that. Obviously, there was that little flurry right at the end of the window, but you look at it and really Long's the only one of that group that's playing. Larea's now hurt. Gomis, they've used a little bit, but like, it is academy guys and it is last year's guys playing at a higher level, being more connected. And so I think to have a manager make the commitment of putting his reputation and his job on the line by saying, let's rebuild this and let's fight for this rather than let's just flip things and spend money. It's not mine. And, bring everything in new. I think that's the most impressive thing. And then to do it with Insigne, where I was one of the people who said when he came in, he would be the best player in Major League Soccer. And he hasn't been. And in thinking that it was all over, it was a little sad to me that we weren't going to see a great player like this be himself in this league and entertain fans week in and week out and represent Toronto the way Giovinco and Josie and Michael Bradley did. So to rescue him for all of us and for him and for that team, I think is pretty special.
I think the patience that John showed in taking over the job, and maybe it's patience or maybe he was just being real wily in the sense that you don't want to have bad results associated with your tenure. But the time that he and his staff put in at the end of 2023, not just to prepare themselves, because remember that was a huge part of this. Like, John had never coached at this level. Going to club from country, it's a completely different cadence. The amount of time you're spending, the amount of games you're playing, the pressure that's on, the way that folks think about their place within the team, it's just much different. So I think the patience that he showed and the preparation he put in to get the buy-in is what impresses me the most. Because you walk into that locker room as John Herdman and you go to Lorenzo Insigne and you say, I have the answers, I can fix this, and you don't have the background or the track record, you need something that's going to convince Insigne, who has very clearly been frustrated and or miserable with the situation, whether it be his health, the performance of the team, the relationship with the management, whatever it was mostly all going bad. So I think just from a human perspective, John being able to read the room, understand what it was going to take, and develop a relationship that's so strong that they're texting on the regular, hugging each other in big moments, which again, when you're winning, it's easy to be happy and buddy-buddy. But clearly Insigne believes in whatever it is that they're doing. And I didn't think there was any chance they were going to be able to get Insigne and Bernadeschi to that point. And I don't know that this is going to continue on and be some banner season. But he, at the very least, has that entire club, that entire squad, again, feeling like something that's moving together in the right direction. Whereas last year, it felt like everybody was pulling off and peeling off and going in different directions and talking about each other in the press and leaking details about this. And this guy does this on the plane. Like, Herdman very quickly, and I think against the odds, figured out a way to do that. So I think the Courtois one, for me, is just understanding. It's patience, too. It's understanding how quickly to implement your ideas and merging practicality with idealism. Like, I think that's hard to do. And I think Courtois coming out of Columbus, you could have imagined a scenario where he's trying to play this attacking, possession-based, like, you know, we're high up the field, we're high-pressing, our counter-press is just killing people. You could have imagined that, but it hasn't really been that way. And I think it's been a smart progression of the introduction of his tactics to say defense first, let's keep our shape right, let's play deep, let's make it hard on the road, we'll find a way on some counterattacks, we'll be good on set pieces, and at the end of these six games we'll be in a better place than anybody else could have imagined.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's sort of what we talked about already early on with Eric Ramsey, of like what's works and not being too idealistic and leaning in one direction too early, letting it sort of find its way. And I think we've seen the examples of like Vilsant getting the starts early on, Chouanier getting a ton of the responsibility. Like, they're going to play some of these young guys, they're going to put them in positions to succeed, but you don't have to overload them and lose early for no reason, just to prove a point and be, live on an idealism. So I agree with you. It's massive for this team. I think like they need a manager like this, clearly. What they were from Nancy to with anyone else is two different clubs. And so they need that to help them, because they're clearly not going to spend at the level to guarantee results year in and year out.
We have five managers in the B zone. We don't have any D's or F's. It's too early. We do have one C. We can argue whether it's just a straight up C or a C+ or a C-. Caleb Porter, I'm sorry, you are in this bottom rung right now, because though there is success in CONCACAF Champions League, and that is very important, 0 wins in 4 games, 0 draws in 4 games, 4 losses out of 4 in the league is a disastrous start, and one that holds you back all year. Caleb Porter said this, quote, "This bus is moving. I'm learning that there are some guys that are on it. Some guys are on it and helping to drive it. Some guys are on it but sitting in the back, and some guys maybe aren't on it. I think everybody wants to be on the bus. It's whether or not they can do it. A lot of it is figuring out who can consistently perform and have the mentality that we need game in and game out."
Oof. I mean, congrats to the bus industry for getting a free ad from Caleb Porter about
he's just prime a big transportation. He's a big transit guy. Huge transit guy.
Clearly hasn't taken the T in a while. So it's all about the bus. This, you could take this in a couple different ways. I think we all kind of think system first of like, okay, is this a tactical thing? Some guys are committed to what Porter wants to do. Some guys are all in, some aren't. But then you go back to what happened last year and the culture issues that they have. And like, this might be bigger than that. And it might be who wants to be a part of this project and who doesn't. It's tough because you have CONCACAF competition, which is sort of going to give you a little bit of a like, yeah, okay, we're not going to 100% lean in on these MLS results from the outside of like judging yet. You have the reality of trying to set this team back, re-up. And then the scary part is there are not a lot of guaranteed performances that I feel like we're not getting. So you look at some teams and you're like, I know Dennis Bouanga is going to start finishing chances at some point. Anders won't believe me, but he will. And like, we'll be okay. I can't say that about Veroni. I can say that about Chankalai in some ways, but not as a game dominator. Outside of Carlos Heel, there are not a lot of guarantees that are coming. And so it's hard to see how they get so much better as they go forward. To me, it's the final third on both sides. It's ponderous on one side, which is stuff we've seen from Caleb Porter's teams, especially at his time finishing at Columbus. It's leaky on the other side. I think that's more personnel than tactics. I said it on the last show. I think they have three center backs that are good number two guys, and none of them are an elite number one. You do that behind a porous midfield and in front of right now a low performing goalkeeper. And like, I think this is what you get.
I will say they've been a little unlucky in the league. I mostly agree with sort of what you laid out there, but Vrioni's red card against DC put him behind the eight ball. It's a XG win for them against Toronto, but Insigne hits a golazo. Atlanta, two penalties that kind of changed the match as they're just kind of holding on.
The Atlanta one to me is the big one. I thought they outplayed Atlanta for a long time, and the calls and that stuff went against them. The DC one is, that's their mistake.
No, I agree. That's self-inflicted.
And now the Cincinnati one was, you got the home game against a team that also played in CONCACAF and that wasn't rested playing Lucho, their A team. Exactly.
That rested Bupenza. And you kind of...
Yeah. So that to me, that falls on the Revs, and that sort of goes to the like, okay, they can hang, but like they didn't have the knockout punch at home against that Cincinnati team to get them over the line.
All right. Tough times in the New England right now, unless you're the Vermont Green. In our B block, and I guess you could give these guys A's if you wanted to. I was trying to grade, you know, I want to have a standard here. Sandro Schwartz, Troy Lesane, Dean Smith, Phil Neville, Chris Armas. They bring up the mid pack here. Who's the best performer so far among those five? Who are you most impressed by?
I'd say Sandro Schwartz. A lot of it's Emil Forsberg related, but he got Lewis Morgan on the field in a position quickly. He's been a little bit flexible. Sean Neal has been out now of the team, which last year would have been a death knell for this squad. He's brought in a young center back and immediately put him in the team. He's dealt with Tolkien being in and out and Will a little bit more. It feels like they have their identity, but that they're also trying other things. I've liked the way he's used Peter Stroud as a third center mid kind of at times. I think it's made them clean and stable and gave the platform for the star attackers to play off them. So I'm impressed by what he's done, and the results early on have followed.
For me, Schwartz is up there. I would go either Troy Lesane or Dean Smith. For Lesane, it's the rapidity at which his system seems to have landed with his players. Like, you talk to people at Red Bull, and one of the things they said about him was he got buy-in really fast. He was able to connect with players and get them to believe in the way he was taking the team, the tactics he wanted to implement, and what he was looking to do. And it's clear from the jump at DC that that's the case. And I think, you know, similar to like what I said about Juan, they went out and got a bunch of guys in the offseason that really fit that. So I give Troy Lesane credit in the sense of getting his guys ready on the training field, but also in working with Ali Mackay to identify and sign the right players for the project. Now, it's still very early. So this early push from DC is not necessarily long-term sustainable, but for the time being, it's looking pretty good. That St. Louis game is going to be a test this weekend. And I throw Dean Smith out there because Charlotte was chaotic in a lot of ways. And they needed somebody to come in and just set a floor, set a standard, and just say, hey, this is the bare minimum, and then we can build from there. I thought, and I've said on this show before, I thought his ability to come in and affect who his designated players were immediately was the sort of like, oh, okay, this guy has a lot of political sway here. Like, they really are following his lead. We'll see if Abada works out. But so far, what he's getting out of the wingers, Tavares, et cetera, has been really impressive in this stable, sit-deep, counterattack sort of system. And if they ever get Enzo Capetti going and get those DP spots filled outside of Abada, then they might be cooking with something. But I think just from the jump for Dean Smith, just to walk in and say, here's the new standard. This is the bare minimum for a team that was a roller coaster ride oftentimes last year is really positive.
So I agree with most of what you said. They're on 4 points. They beat NYCFC at home on a set piece in week one with NYCFC not really playing soccer, and they dropped the last two. So I get what you're saying. I do think there is like a floor to what he has built. I haven't seen the DPs come in yet, right? Abada might be the guy, but we don't know.
Enzo Capetti might not be the guy too. Like there are some things to find out with Charlotte. I do agree with you that the top end talent part of this equation gets a little bit iffy. Now Phil Neville has a lot of top end talent. Where would you put him?
He's behind Schwartz and Lassane to me because they had more work to do. Where, like, I think he's done a good job. I think Kamal Miller's a great ad. I think that he got results early on. I mean, getting some goals out of Antony was big. It feels like they've reset the goalkeeper position. He brought Eric Williamson right into the team. Then he lost Eric Williamson. Then he brought Evander back. And everyone seems to be on the same page. I think the Jonathan Rodriguez signing is going to be very good. Like, I think they need more high-end talent. I think they need another finisher. I think he'll be that guy. And again, as I've said, if the number is what we're hearing, it still also leaves them up open to making an addition to like blow everything out of the water. So all of that is good. Like that's all you need of like, okay, at least he's got buy-in and there's positive energy to the environment moving forward. I don't watch them and say, oh my God, this is a team that's bringing something new to the league and no one knows what they're getting from them and they're blowing teams out and it's unbelievable. So it sits there in a B for me.
All right. Strong B there. Chris Armas. Okay. Let's just give the grades. I think Troy was saying you'd have to say B+. I'm down to give Sandro a B+ as well. Though I think it's a little shakier there than Troy's. Dean and Phil, we go straight B. Are you good with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So Chris Armas is our final guy in the B's.
Yeah, I mentioned it on Monday. I just, so far in watching them, he has not gotten the full 100% run through the wall with their head down, pressing buy-in. But I think they're at least understanding how to create the moments where it should happen. It felt like against Seattle, they'd cut off. The guys understood shadow marking of where to affect the game behind them to sort of force the ball into specific areas. And then it's that final piece that's missing. And Connor Ronan is a huge loss for them. Like that is going to make it tough because he's the one who was going to cover all of the ground behind the players that were then going to be able to commit and try and win the ball higher up the field. But in saying that, they got blown out in game one against Portland and they still played pretty well after that. They went down on the road against Seattle and RSL. And they fought back to get results, even though they were red card assisted. It at least feels like there's fight in this group. So that's a good starting point for a manager coming into a team that was just not playing for anything for a long time last year and has not now over the last 2 years. So that alone, I think, keeps it above a Caleb Porter conversation. And it's also grading on a scale. What are your expectations for Colorado versus what you've gotten?
I think based on that, I was leaning B minus, but I think I could go straight B. For Armas, it's going to take time for this team to figure out this identity change. They're not going to be hair on fire Red Bulls press, but you're right. In those moments where they decide it is their moment to win the ball back, like there needs to be a little bit more commitment, but also collective connection from them. He just doesn't have the top end talent on the attacking side. Hoffa Navarro does a lot of good things. He's not going to be a volume scorer, I don't think, in this league. And they've got to find a way to get more out of Georgie. They moved him onto the left flank. He's played in the middle. Like, if they're going to go far, the Rapids need Georgie to be like a 20-goal contribution guy.
Yeah. The one thing that I saw this week, which I'm interested to see how they handle this going forward, is when Ronan comes back. Could they play Cole Bassett next to him as an eight? And that just gets you another attacking offensive threat on the field because then you can play two pure wingers. Then you have Navarro. Can Cole Bassett making late runs, scoring goals, make Georgie's life easier and make Navarro's life easier? He played as a deeper center midfielder when he broke in as a teenager. He then has played more in attacking spots, I think, to take responsibility off his shoulders, some because he doesn't have great ground coverage sometimes and constantly being connected. But if you're playing on the front foot and you're playing higher up the field, can you maybe take that risk with a guy like that?
We'll see. We haven't seen Lamina Diak yet for this team. So you would think it's Ronan and him and then some combination of Mihailovic.
But he's only on loan till like June.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. It's a strange time. All right. Those are our early progress reports, but you have the rest of the semester, certainly the full year, to get your assignments
Listen,
in
coaches,
order.
The bus is moving. Some of you are on it. Some of you are in the back. Some of you are in the front. One of you is driving. So you guys all have that opportunity to continue to be a part of the bus. Just flag it down as we come by,
right,
and just make sure you get your monthly pass out and we'll let you on.
Yeah, everybody wants to be on the bus. We understand that part. It's, you know, it's whether or not you're really committed to way the travel the bus is going on right now. Speaking of how committed are you, Golden Boot draft update time. Matt Bronstein says, will Amal Pellegrino score a goal this season? Sorry, Weebs. Thank you for thinking of the Quakes during the all-important Golden Boot draft. Anders has promised that he will drop the – there it is. It's arrived. Here are your standings so far in the always competitive and – oh, hey, looky here. Where do you think you – oh, my gosh. Where do you think you rank, Dave, out of five teams?
I'm scrolling through it right now.
You have the Tom and Kalins, the Doyles, the Weebies, Anders, Maria. You're on the right side.
I didn't realize it was put in the standings. Has anyone besides Cucho scored for me? Lucho has won. Diego Rubio has won. Yeah, my team is buns, to say the least.
Yeah. If Bakrar could finish his chances, or Enzo Capetti, you would be – You would be
if Bakrar could finish, I'd be fine because he's had some golden opportunities. Carranz has been hurt. That's a little tough. I think Facu Torres will get some. Christian Espinoza, I don't know how many goals he's going to score. So that feels like a tough one for me.
5 goals so far for the fight in David Goss's through 5 match days. In second place is Anders and Maria, who got the leftovers and have still doubled you up with 10 goals. The leftovers are pretty good, though. I mean, Thiago Almada is among the leftovers, Duncan McGuire in there, Mijatovic is on their team, so he'll get a chance this weekend, but 10 goals for them. Then tied for second are Doyle and Wiebe, 12 goals apiece. Yakumakis and Luis Suarez really running stuff for me. I got a bunch of zeros at the bottom. Camungo felt like a good pick, so did Pellegrino and Sebas Ferreira, but those are feeling like maybe 3 albatrosses for me. Meanwhile, Doyle has Messi and Teemu Pukki, and things are going all right for him on 12, and then... Boo, Tom and Kalen, number one, defending their Golden Boot title. So 13 goals so far for them.
Remember Tom drafted Portland's number 9?
Oh, no. So, yeah, he gets Jonathan Rodriguez.
But he was like, I want the big signing. If Portland makes a bigger signing at number 9 in the summer, does he have the ability to switch? And if
no.
he did, would he lose the goal? So he's locked in.
He's locked in. That would have to be a mid-year pick from Mr. Tom Bogert. We'll see how that works out for him. We end with this one from Thomas Schultz. It's just for Anders. The fact that 4 games, the Sounders haven't scored a goal from open play and look worse in front of goal than they did last year would probably be a good one to talk about, even if Anders would not love that topic. Do you think it's going to turn around for the Sounders?
Yeah. This is who Seattle is. This is who they are all the time. Doyle talked on Monday about a couple of tweaks they could make, moving Roldan inside, moving Morris out wide. If De La Vega's on the field, I think he's a difference maker. He's shifty. Like what we saw in the, 50 minutes we've ever seen him play, I think looks dangerous and good. And while Rui Diaz isn't himself, he is actually still better than he was last year. So I think there's a little bit there with Rusnak coming back. They'll get Alex Roldan into the attack. Like I think they're fine. Are they an MLS Cup contender? I'm not sure. They were second in the West last year. I don't think they're that far off that. The question would be if some other teams have taken a step. Like it was soft last year in the Western Conference, and I think that led to it.
When Rusnak and Jao Paulo are back, when Yaimar is back, when Steph Fry is back, I'll make a more definitive judgment on the Sounders team. As it stands, clearly a playoff team, but clearly a team having big difficulty creating chances.
So one of the other things on chance creation, just to throw out there so that we can try and stretch to get to Anders' preferred length of time, is Jao Paulo has played further up the field in his time there and been dangerous. And with Obed Vargas and Atencio both looking, when they're healthy and available, that could also be an option for them. Or there's potential room there to say, can we look around MLS and flip Rusnak for someone else? Even if it's not an elite offensive attacking player, is it an equal level player who maybe fits what you're looking for better and someone else needs that? So I think it opens up a little bit more potential for them, and they've done a pretty good job of like backfilling this roster so that they have some depth to make moves like that.
All right, big weekend coming up. Match day 6, MLS Season Pass is where you can watch the countdown, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, straight in MLS 360 and all the 7:30 p.m. games. And then 12:30 a.m. Eastern time, yeah, you can watch live after the West Coast game, MLS wrap-up, or you can do what many do, which is wake up with a coffee on Sunday and have that. We'll wrap up every single game from the weekend because they're all on Saturday. All right, I'm out of here for a little spring break next week. Then, Dave, you're on GA Cup. In the meantime, we will enjoy the weekend and regroup. Adios, everybody. Have a good one. We'll be right back.